It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for. And one of those is Christmas. Hi, Merry Christmas to all of you. It's 6 days from today. And fighting for Christmas is not just about celebrating a holiday or lights, although that's great, isn't it? It's wonderful. I'm confident many of you are planning for your families, getting ready, planning your meal, shopping, thinking of others. And of course, we do this on the backdrop of the greatest gift of all. The gift of God who became a man. It would be like you and me becoming a bug in order to reach bugs. But God became a man in order that he might save us. It is such good news. It is the real hope of the world, which reminds me of a conversation that went on just a few days ago between Oprah Winfrey and Michelle Obama. Let's listen. It's cut three.
Your husband's administration, everything, the election, was all about hope. Do you think that this administration achieved that?
Yes, I do, because we feel the difference now.
Yeah.
See, now we're feeling what not having hope feels like. You know, hope is necessary. It's a necessary concept. And Barack didn't just talk about hope because he thought it was just a nice slogan to get votes. I mean, he and I and so many believe that if you, what else do you have if you don't have hope?
Well, she's right about that, but the hope is not in Barack Obama, or is it in Donald Trump? I have to say, our hope is much, much deeper than that. Thank goodness our hope rests on someone whose character is flawless, who never fails, whose love never fails. In fact, when you look in the Bible and you study, I did this once, I was having a long period of time in my life of despair, and I made myself study every single scripture that mentioned hope, and there were a lot of them. I had page after page after page, and one of the things I noticed was that hope was often linked, it was more often than not linked with because of his unfailing love. Because of the character of God, we have unfailing hope because of his unfailing love. So it isn't anything about a presidential election. Whether it's Barack Obama or Donald Trump, we have hope in something eternal because we have a God of character who loves us with an unfailing love. Well, one of the things that my husband and I missed this week, and I'm just going to report on it because I love doing this, but we missed it. Thousands of people went to Arlington National Cemetery and laid wreaths on the graves of the fallen. When we've done this in the past, it is one of the most moving experiences because I saw, you know, families come and bring lawn chairs and sit at the graveside, right over the grave of their loved one. And I remember going to sit down with them and find out about their story. Young moms with young sons who had died, telling their stories. And then, of course, that goes back decades to older soldiers, to other wars. And so laying the wreaths to commemorate their death is something that Wreaths Across America started in 1992. And thousands of people go out, or hundreds at least, go out and lay these wreaths. It's very moving. I hope that you saw maybe pictures of it on television over the weekend, but it's just something that you can do to remember at this time of year. I always think about people who are lonely, people who are just divorced, people who've just lost, you know, I know two women in close proximity have just lost their husbands. This is their first Christmas without their husband. One of them is a good friend of mine. She had her first Thanksgiving without him, and she actually entertained in her home. And as she was praying, she started to cry. But she's very tough about it, you know. She's still entertaining. But so these are the kinds of people we need to be thinking about and kind of weaving into our celebrations and letting them cry with us, you know. So So it's Christmas time. And with that, let me get more practical here. I want to say, you know, this is the time of year when people give their year-end donations to. And I know so many of you love AFR talk. You listen, you say the most beautiful things, most affirming comments you give us. And if you are thinking about making a year-end donation, of course, AFA is a great place to spend your money. And I want you to know that AFA has just received the highest rating for financial accountability from Charity Navigator, which is probably the premier rating service in the country. So your money is safe and well spent with the American Family Association. If you haven't made a year-end donation and you'd like to do that, it's afa.net, afa.net. Also, I want to remind you of some things not to buy. Remember, don't go to Target, for heaven's sake, until Target protects women and children, and it segregates their, and I would say men too. What man wants women coming into their bathroom or changing facilities? Not the right kind of men, that's for sure. And so until Target sort of sorts that out, we should not be shopping there. That's why American Family Association is leading a boycott. So, and also remember our naughty and nice list, which you can get at afa.net, just to check to see maybe where the preferred people are. Just in that case, that list is about people, businesses that support Christmas or mention Christmas or celebrate Christmas, and those that just refuse to. Remember, it hasn't been that, it was last year and the year before when we got to a real low point where there was just a complete refusal to acknowledge Christmas. And that was sad. For heaven's sake, we don't need that. It's not only spiritually, it's the saddest, because it's a lost people and a lost country where Jesus' name cannot be mentioned and the story of Christ cannot be mentioned. But when it bleeds over into commerce, if we can do something about it, we should. And so we are. All right. Campus Reform went out on a campus to ask students about banning Christmas, and I thought you might like to know what they had to say. Let's listen.
I'm with Students for an Inclusive Holiday Season.
Okay.
And so we are just kind of letting the administration know that a lot of students on campus choose not to celebrate anything in the winter season.
Cool. It's like a very Christian normative campus, and so we feel like it's just not really a safe space for people of different faith traditions.
Like this time of year, it feels like people can like shove their like holiday, like happiness in your face, like Merry Christmas, like ooh, and it just, you know, it gets kind of old.
So we're just sending a letter to the administration to be like, hey, like, this can be like almost oppressive for some people. Would you guys like to sign?
I will totally sign.
Yeah, sure.
All right, awesome, yeah.
Totally agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, like the Christmas lights, and there's been rumors that like a Christmas tree is going to be going up and like things like that. It just kind of feels like for the non like Christmas celebrating students that it's just kind of like a slap in our face that like we don't get to celebrate anything over winter break. Ever since the Trump election, like people have been emboldened to, you know, like be throwing like Merry Christmas and like Christmas carols everywhere you go.
I know a lot of students personally that like aren't religious, and so when they see like Christmas trees and like all the lights, it can be a little bit triggering. So we're just trying to make campus a safe space for them.
Cool. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
I'm sorry, but triggering safe spaces, it's so threatening when someone says Merry Christmas, but that's where we are. And that's certainly where we would have been had this election not gone the way it is. You know, remember Donald Trump made his speech, last week with Merry Christmas at his podium. That's what it said. Merry Christmas. And Christmas trees in the backdrop of speaking, you know, was just, I mean, regardless of how you feel about him, thank goodness for that. Thank goodness for that. Yeah, but we don't, of course, want to stop with just saying Merry Christmas or just having Christmas trees. It is our responsibility as followers of Jesus to make clear to our neighbors and our friends what the good news is all about and what Christmas really does mean, the birth of a Savior. We all need a Savior. It's a kind of a tough culture to make that point because you know what the culture says. I'm a nice person. I'm a nice person. No, I'm a nice person. I don't judge. I'm a nice person. Sometime we will do an expanded conversation on that, but I just say, you know, you hear me say, I think I might say it in the opening, we are not called to be nice. Nice is meaningless. Nice is about your reputation. It's not about God's reputation. Nice is some sort of a fake gentility ingratiates you to others for no necessarily good purpose. And certainly when they are lost and dying around you and you're just being nice, it is worthless. And then, of course, judging, that's a whole other issue. I always say that there was a time when the most known verse among people was John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. Well, not so anymore. Now the verse that everyone know is judge not lest you be judged. So there's a great discussion, it's just part of the conversation. I don't judge. So I actually got into an interesting conversation with a friend about that. What does that mean to you? And of course, she actually could not define that because we assess people all the time. It's the judgment about their eternity we're not allowed to make. It's also judgments with a certain pride or arrogance, knowing full well that we are all sinners. We all have stuff in our lives. So we start sniffing down our nose at other people. That's the kind of judgment God is talking about. But assessing and evaluating sin and choices, that's something we are required to do. We must do that. Otherwise, we couldn't really survive in this culture. We'll talk more about that at another time. But I want to get to this last story because Sheriff Joe Arpaio, of course, he's one of my favorites. I tell you, I'm an unabashed favorite. Supporter of the Sheriff Joe Arpaio from Maricopa County in Phoenix. And he was targeted, no question about it, by the Obama administration for a number of reasons. One of not the least of which was he formed this commission way back in, I think, 2011 to examine scientifically Barack Obama's birth certificate. And they did a press conference a few days ago to report their findings. Let's listen. Cut 7.
Sheriff Joe Arpaio, along with his lead investigator into this investigation of President Barack Obama's birth certificate, Mike Zullo, holding a press conference here. It's actually just now wrapping up. They are closing this investigation and telling us all of their findings. Now, so far, the two laid out a PowerPoint presentation here today. They say the evidence proves the birth certificate was forged for Barack Obama, given by the White House. The two showed the birth certificate provided by the White House side by side with a certificate of a woman by the name of Johanna Ani. They were printed 16 days apart. They say dates, words, and letters were taken from Ani's certificate and copy-pasted on Obama's certificate. Zullo also laid out birth certificate laws in Hawaii.
Well, when you start to study the Hawaii statutes, you realize there are ways to amend a certificate that turns the real certificate into a sequestered record in another file, and the amended information now becomes the original birth document. And that could happen 6,400 years later.
And Zullo says he wanted to actually be the clearinghouse in this case. He says that he wanted to clear this birth certificate, but unfortunately, he says the findings of this were, he was unable to do that. In fact, he says as of right now, he's unsure where President Barack Obama was in fact born. He says that was never his intent to find that information out, but only to validate or not validate this birth certificate.
All right, so that's Fox 10 in Phoenix, and the thing of it is, Joe Arpaio, of course, has been the stalwart on the immigration issue, trying to enforce the laws in Phoenix, and that's where he came into the crosshairs of the administration. You know, I've interviewed Joe a number of times. He is a brilliant guy. I mean, they want to make him some joke. Trust me, he's no joke. He is an absolute bear of a man with a pedigree that's very impressive. So he formed this commission, and he's been fighting like a one-man battle against, I believe, the oppression of the Obama administration, and he's become the object of mockery over this. You know, Donald Trump picked up the information and started talking about it, and no one wants to even report on this now because, you know, you have cooties if you talk about Barack Obama's birth certificate. But they say it's 9 points of forgery on the document, and you can find that if you just look at it, look for it. This is kind of Sheriff Joe's parting shot, I think, because Barack Obama and his team managed to get Joe out of office. They've charged him. They try to bring federal charges against him. It's just been an amazing story. And maybe we can catch up with Sheriff Joe himself to tell this story at some point soon. All right. Well, coming up next, the electors meet today to select the president of the United States officially. What's that all about? Will they change their vote? We'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Are you aware many men struggle in the aftermath of abortion? According to research, 8% of men are seriously damaged emotionally. This means nearly 5 million men are walking wounded, with millions more affected to lesser degrees. We have a website to help these hurting fathers. MenAndAbortion.net can refer a man to free peer-to-peer counselors anywhere in the nation. There are videos and books, healing Bible studies, research, and more. Men need to know they're not alone and there's help for them. MenAndAbortion.net is the place for them to begin their journey back to wholeness. Please pray more hurting fathers of aborted babies will reach out and connect with the help they need. Once again, the address is MenAndAbortion.net.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Your American Family Association will never quit.
We will never quit, ever.
We will continue to stand for God's truth as long as we have breath and the religious liberty to do so.
We believe that God might still show mercy to America by sending revival.
So, we will continue to be salt and light in our nation.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association this year through your prayers, your financial partnership, and your determination to be salt and light where you live. In the days ahead, we ask for your continued involvement so that as battles arise, your American Family Association will be here to fight for your family, fight for America.
Let me tell you something. All God asks of you is faithfulness. That's it.
Today, when you give $35 or more, we'll send you the new book, Our Call to Faithfulness, The Voice and Legacy of Don Wildman. Visit afa.net/faithfulness.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. The First Lady of these United States says the nation is entering a time of hopelessness, taking a veiled jab at President-elect Donald Trump during an interview with Oprah.
The election was all about hope. Do you think that this administration achieved that?
Yes, I do, because we feel the difference now.
Yeah.
See, now we're feeling what not having hope feels like.
Yeah, I kind of felt that way when her husband got elected. Remember back in 2007 when Mrs. Obama said it was the first time she ever felt proud of her country? Something tells me she may not be all that proud of us anymore. I'm sort of disappointed in the First Lady. During the presidential race, I seem to recall Mrs. Obama boasting that when Republicans go low, Democrats go high. Then again, she did marry a community organizer. I'm Todd Stearns.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
Hillary Clinton lost this election in the electoral vote.
I think that Hillary Clinton was severely damaged by the hacking of her emails and the DNC emails that went on a drip, drip, drip basis every day for 3 months.
So you
every
think
day
this
instead
Russian
of waking up and talking about the economy,
the election
they
results.
Woke up and talked about. Absolutely.
So you think it wasn't her message that didn't reach voters who were subject to high unemployment states like Wisconsin and Michigan, that wasn't what did her in. This thing did
no,
her
No, I think that there are several factors in winning and losing. Look, if 80,000 people
lost.
Had voted differently
she
in
lost.
This election.
The Russians didn't make her lose. She if, lost.
Well, that was an interesting exchange between Neil Cavuto. By the way, he's one of my favorites on Fox. If he comes on early in, like, late afternoon. So you might not get to see him often. But I think Neil's one of the best, honestly. And he was interviewing Alexandra Pelosi, who sounds a lot like her mother, Nancy. And she's one of the ones driving this pitch to get the 538 electors to at least 37 of them to peel away votes from Donald Trump. They vote today nationwide in all 50 states. They will be casting their ballot, and it will be over by 5 o'clock this afternoon. Hans von Spakovsky is the managing editor of the Election Law Reform Initiative at Heritage. He's also a senior legal fellow there. He used to work for the Election Commission, the Federal Election Commission. And I've asked him, you know, he's with me often, and I can't think of anybody better to talk to about what's going on today around the country than Hans. Hans, thanks for joining me today.
Sure, thanks for having me back, and Merry Christmas to you and everybody listening.
Thank you so much, Hans. I'm really in the Christmas spirit. I'm having trouble concentrating, actually, but I guess we better. We better see this thing through. All right, just practically speaking, you know, I don't think in my entire lifetime I've ever paid this much attention to electors. I mean, I remember... I have paid attention, of course, but like, how is it that they vote? Do they do electronic ballots? Do they do paper ballots? And who do they submit them to? And where do they go? And all of that.
Actually, I can tell you that from personal experience, because the last time people were so concerned about this was in 2000. And that's because, of course, Bush was finally declared the winner by only a couple of electoral votes. And so the Bush campaign was extremely concerned about a elector changing his vote. So they had alternate electors go to the meetings just to make sure that if somebody started to do what they weren't supposed to do, they could be immediately replaced. What happens is they go to the state capitol, and there, you know, it's actually a paper ballot. Each elector votes and signs the ballot, and then it is taken up and counted in the state capitol, and then they basically certify it and send it to the National Archivist of the United States and to the President of the Senate, which, of course, is the Vice President.
That's interesting. And there are 538 electors, like there are 538 congressional districts.
Correct. Because each state gets two electors for their two senators, plus they get however many congressmen or congresswomen they have. That's the other electors they get for their state.
So, Hans, this whole business of this term faithless voters, or faithless votes or voters, I'd never heard that before either. Innocent me, I never thought about that, but it's not a new term, is it? That's the idea that an elector who's sworn to cast his vote or her vote for the candidate that his state elected, there have been faithless electors in the past, haven't there?
There have, but the number has been extremely small. Last week, I was actually counting up the numbers. We've had, I think, around 23,000 electors throughout our history who have cast votes. Only a little over one-half of 1% have not voted the way they should. Even in the 2000 election, when it came down, I think, three electoral college votes, only one elector in the entire country didn't vote the way they were supposed to, and it was an Al Gore elector who abstained.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that George W. Bush was only two electors apart from Gore. Man, that is hair raising.
Yeah, it was quite a close race, which is why they're concerned about it. Look, a lot has been made about this over the last couple of weeks, but I can virtually guarantee you that it's going to come out exactly the way we think it is supposed to come out, based on the way the electors were pledged. Because, like I said, electors are chosen because of their loyalty to the party, because they are party leaders at the grassroots level, and a huge number of them are not about to prevent their party's president, a nominee, from becoming president.
Still, it's amazing to me the lengths to which the left is going. Last week, Hans, I saw a letter from MoveOn.org, which we know is funded, at least in part, if not in all, by George Soros and company, encouraging their members, you know, to harass it doesn't say harass, but that's exactly what it amounts to, electors. In fact, Robert Greene, I think his name is Greene, was on Fox in the last couple of days. Robert Graham, he's the Arizona GOP chairman, and he had an interesting, we've heard other stories of this harassment, but this was a different one. Let's listen to him.
One day I had a couple of emails from the same person that said that they were going to follow me and they were going to make us very uncomfortable because they knew where we lived and that I needed to cast a vote for Trump. Well, the next day on the freeway, I was actually looked to my right and I see people following me actually with their phone up against the window videoing. They slowed down behind. They got in front of my car. When I was at a traffic light, they were taking pictures. Mm. And that happened 2 days in a row and two different people. But again, slowly passing in front of our house, same car, same people. And that kind of intimidated for me, being the state party chair, has been not normal, but it's a little bit more, I'm much more public. But the other yeah. electors, this is a new experience for them all around. Think about the stress you have. You have anywhere from 50 to 100 letters a day. Now yeah. they're sending Christmas card type letters. Oh. And then you have emails that are just, we have one lady that's on our electoral college who received 100,000 emails in one day. Her phone locked up, her home computer. She had to bring in help to just clear it out so she could actually function day to day on a goodness. Normal basis.
All right, so that was Robert Graham from Arizona, who is an elector from Arizona. And even actually, Hans, there have been worse stories than that.
There have. I mean, there have actually been threats made against electors. And what I find, frankly, shameful is that the U.S. Justice Department, Loretta Lynch, hasn't opened up any investigations of those threats. The reason being that threatening an elector is a clear violation of the Voting Rights Act. Section 11B of the Voting Rights Act protects individuals who are voting in federal elections against coercion, intimidation, and threats. And while some of these are just people trying to persuade, others clearly meet the standards of the statute, and yet the Lynch Justice Department has not done anything about it.
It is amazing, and it's noteworthy. It has to be said. In fact, I was going to ask you that question. Here they are so concerned about voter rights, whether it's voter ID in North Carolina and Texas, you know, making sure that people don't have to bring ID. This is what the Justice Department's been working on, making sure people don't have to prove that they're American citizens. That's their passion, and they don't care a whit that the electors are having death threats and other such things. So it is pretty remarkable. You know, here's the story. I did not know about this either, Hans, until I read this morning that Chris Suprun of Texas, I did know about him. He's supposedly the only GOP elector who is publicly opposing Trump. But reading from, what was it this morning? Maybe the Politico. It looks like he has actually like a fake story that's part of his narrative. I don't know if you heard this. Let me read this. Suprun, that's his pronunciation, announced his intention to vote for someone other than Trump in a New York Times op-ed, recalling his service on September 11th, 2001, as a first responder to the attack on the Pentagon. But on Friday, a Texas television station ran a story accusing Suprun of inventing his 9/11 role, the story that Suprun built his career around. The charge, based on a discrepancy with Suprun's LinkedIn page, featured an anonymous former colleague accusing Suprun of stolen valor. It just gets more and more interesting, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And so far, he's the only elector we know of for Trump that has said anything like this. The only people who have been complaining are Clinton electors. And, you know, going back to that clip that you played of Christine Pelosi, let's keep in mind that while no one sanctions hacking or anything like that, there's absolutely no claims that any of the emails or other communications that were released were phony or fake. What Christine Pelosi is complaining about is that the WikiLeaks revealed the truth of what was going on inside the DNC, including, you know, the former chairwoman of the DNC actually conspiring with the Clinton campaign to freeze out Bernie Sanders. That's what they're upset about, that the truth came out.
Absolutely. Okay, let's try this microphone. Sorry, we're having some technical problems. Here we go. Sorry, Hans. My microphone just crashed on me here. All right, I have a couple of other questions I want to ask you. And this is not a news story, but I never understood this. In Detroit, in examining their voting records, they found out that there were too many votes counted in Detroit precincts that there were no ballots to back up. In other words, they had numbers, but not actual ballots. In fact, in 37% of Detroit's precincts, that's what they found, I guess, in the recount. What do you know about that?
Well, I think actually what was happening was they had more votes than the number of people that they actually checked into the polling place. And that is either, it's a sign of one of two things, either extremely bad poll workers who were very sloppy and started letting people in and voting without checking them off the voter registration list, or, as used to happen in places like Chicago, and unfortunately in some places still does, they basically packed phony votes into either the ballot box or the voting machines after the polling hours closed, and in order to increase the vote of a particular candidate.
This is another story that I'm really curious to know what you think about. Georgia's Secretary of State's office is appealing to the Trump administration because he said there were 10 separate cyber attacks to the Secretary of State's office in Indiana. And he is tracing this back to an IP address at the Department of Homeland Security. So, in other words, the inference is that somebody at the Department of Homeland Security may have been trying to hack the Indiana Secretary of State's office, and they were always on strategic dates. One was February 2nd, the day after Georgia's voter registration deadline. Another was just days before the SEC primary, and another one was in November, the day before the day of the presidential election. What do you know about that, Hans?
That has got to be one of the oddest stories that has come out of this election. Everyone should also recall that just prior to the election, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson, suddenly started making noises about potentially declaring the entire election system across the United States as critical infrastructure under this federal statute passed after 9/11. And he was saying that that was because they were afraid there might be some kind of hacking attack on our election process. And then this actually starts going on coming from DHS. Yes, the Trump administration is going to need to do a very intense internal investigation to find out whether this was just some errant employee of DHS doing this on their own, or whether this was sanctioned conduct from the highest reaches of DHS, because this is the kind of thing that should not be happening.
Sorry, we're having trouble again. The bottom line is, this Indiana Secretary of State said that he has appealed to Department of Homeland Security I don't know how many times, and every time they get back to him, it's unsatisfactory. The answers are incomplete. They say, oh, it's a problem with the software. Oh, it's a rogue employee in, I think they said, Sarasota. Then they said it was a rogue employee in some other. They always have a response, but it's never an answer. So, I mean, I have to add that because I think this is potentially extremely serious. I mean, Hans, worst case scenario, what could this be?
Well, this could have been someone trying to hack into the system in order to support the proposal that the Secretary of Homeland Security, Jane Johnson, was making. Because I warned against that, that there was no reason for that. There was no actual potential for a hacking attack into the election system. And yet he was talking about this almost as if they wanted to give an excuse for eventually nationalizing or federalizing our election process. And this might have been somebody trying to stage some kind of hacking attack to make it look like what Jay Johnson was saying was right.
Oh, that would make sense. And, you know, you and I remember we talked around this time before the election. We talked about this big setup with the Russian involvement. And we talked about the fact that, you know, I was saying I think that they're setting us up to blame the Russians and then blame Trump's alleged involvement with them if he should win the election in order to delegitimize his election. I actually think that's what they were up to, and I'm sure you would agree with me. Hans, we have to take a break, but when we come back, let's go, speaking of Russia, let's go into that whole notion that Russia hacked our elections, because there's some dispute about this. We've been talking about it, and I want to know what you think. Also, I'm going to ask you about your Russian pest, because it's really interesting. It's kind of personal, but it's fun. So if you don't mind sharing that with us, that would be fun.
Happy to do it.
All right. My guest is Hans von Spakovsky of Heritage Foundation, and we shall return right after this, Cindy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hi, this is Ron Ball, and this is your Choose Greatness Minute. When my wife Amy and I had been married for 2 years, we went through a time of great financial difficulty. The stress was enormous. I would wake up every morning at 2 a.m. and throw up. After one of these incidents, I went into another room and prayed and asked for God to show me a way out. He led me to a financial mentor who taught me how to get out of debt, stay out of debt, and manage our money effectively. Do you want a great life? The foundation of a great life is financial security. You need to manage your money, stay out of debt, and manage your finances effectively. That is as true for a nation as it is for an individual or a family. You need to remember Proverbs 22:7, the borrower is servant to the lender. Stay out of debt. Become great. Build a financial foundation that will help you achieve God's great purpose in your life. To learn more, go to choosegreatness.com.
Everyone knows that the entertainment industry desensitizes viewers, especially impressionable young minds. So join with 1 Million Moms. It's the ongoing, effective movement that anyone can join. We won't give up protecting our families against indecency. Visit 1millionmoms.com and click on Successes to read about the kind of victories we can have when we work together. Sign up. Speak up. 1millionmoms.com.
The political and cultural landscape of our nation will continue to undergo major changes with the shift in power in our nation's capital. All the issues we care about, religious liberty, the sanctity of life and marriage, national security, immigration, and the economy will be up for debate. Focal Point will help you process it all from a biblical perspective live every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 Central on American Family Radio. I'm your congenial, convivial, and amiable host, Brian Fisher, and I approve this message.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. Hey, the train to Israel's leaving, so it's a last call. Actually, a train can't go to Israel, but you get the idea. We're planning on going to the Holy Land in March, and it's time to sign up if you're going to go, because we've only got just a few seats left on our tour to Israel. We're going to fly from JFK to Tel Aviv and then bus to Jerusalem, where we'll be for 4 days, and we'll be seeing all the places you've read about in the Bible. And we're going to be on to Bethlehem, then Jericho, and the Dead Sea, and Masada, and the Jordan River, and the Sea of Galilee, and the Valley of Armageddon, and Mount Carmel, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to be a wonderful time seeing Israel. For more information, visit the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Today, what its perpetrators hope to brand the Purple Revolution will move from their concerted weeks-long effort to undermine Donald Trump's incipient presidency to preventing it outright. Their hope is to secure enough defections from so-called faithless electors to prevent a Trump victory in the Electoral College. That seems unlikely to happen, but when it doesn't, expect those on the hard left and their assorted allies, the Black Lives Matter crowd, the Islamists, and many in the press, to ratchet up their campaign to subvert the Trump administration. Take, for example, their sudden, highly selective concern about Vladimir Putin's aggressiveness. Mr. Trump's critics vehemently denounce the Kremlin despot for allegedly cyber-helping elect our next president, but not Putin's ominous nuclear buildup and threats. President Obama wore purple at his end-of-year press conference. Look for him to community organize its revolution in 2017. This is Frank Affney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio. Everybody.
Exalted, 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 shall be exalted. Every valley.
Republican members of the Electoral College, this message is for you. As you know, our founding fathers built the Electoral College to safeguard the American people from the dangers of a demagogue and to ensure that the presidency only goes to someone who is to an eminent degree endowed with the requisite qualifications.
An eminent degree. Someone who is highly qualified for the job.
The Electoral College was created specifically to prevent an unfit candidate from becoming president.
There are 538 members of the Electoral College. You
and just 36 other conscientious Republican electors can make a difference
by voting your conscience on December 19th.
And thereby shaping the future of our nation.
I'm not asking you to vote for Hillary Clinton.
I'm not asking you to vote for Hillary Clinton.
I'm not asking you to vote for Hillary Clinton.
As you know, the Constitution gives electors the right to vote for any eligible person.
Any eligible person, no matter which party they belong to.
But it should certainly be someone you consider especially competent.
Especially competent to serve as President of the United States of America.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. President Josiah Bartlett, eminently qualified to tell the electors who to vote for and who not, all the way to Mike Farrell of MASH, and ending with Hot Lips Houlihan, who says she's not telling you to vote for Hillary Clinton. That's a video put out by Unite for America to target the electors. And by the way, they targeted one particular elector to make it personal. And they said it was, the piece is titled Mr. Ashley McMillan. The only problem is that Ashley McMillan is not a man. So they got it all wrong. The reason I can laugh, you know, actually, you know, they're very good at these videos, meaning celebrity Hollywood. And these things have in the past been very powerful, but the irony here is that nobody's paying attention. They are making themselves fools, at least revealing themselves to be the fools they always have been. They are not serious people when it comes to these matters. They're certainly not to be listened to. And I think the American people are finally figuring this out. And as a sidebar, you know, we've talked about this censorship of social media. We've talked about it a lot. YouTube is not allowing any comments. They've been shut out on the YouTube page that's featuring this video by, that isn't actually Josiah, it's Martin Sheen, you know. But so they're not even allowing comments on that. Hans von Spakovsky is my guest. He's the senior legal fellow from the Heritage Foundation. Hans, have you seen that video?
I have, and if it were 2008, I would have thought they were talking about President Obama as not being eminently qualified.
I know. Well, we know that.
Look, here's the thing about what a waste of time this is. I mean, two things. One, they don't seem to get the fact that Americans really don't care what the very liberal Hollywood elite say. And in fact, if the Hollywood elite is in favor of something, most Americans know there must be something wrong with it. But here's the thing. They were saying, oh, yeah, we're not asking you to vote for Hillary Clinton, we're just asking the Trump electors not to vote for him. Well, if that were to actually happen under the 12th Amendment and the Constitution, it simply would mean that neither candidate had enough Electoral College votes to win, and it would go to the U.S. House of Representatives to choose who the president is. Each state gets one vote, and Republicans control the majority of the states in the congressional delegation. So what in the world would this achieve? It would still get Donald Trump as president.
Well, the thing, the power that they have wielded, of course, is just impressions and setting a narrative and, you know, putting things in people's minds, doubts. And they have had tremendous control, Hans. I'm sure you would agree with that. Although some of us, you know, we've always laughed at it and we've kind of marveled that the culture's paid attention. But I think the remarkable thing here is I think even the unreached culture that's not paying attention is finally getting the whiff of the scent of something rotten here. Like, really? You know, and so I think that's good news for us, that they have really, I think, have lost their sway because they've become so foolish. And so, but anyway, they're trying. Let's talk, you know, one of the things one of the things that the left is trying, and we discussed this right before the break, we've discussed it a lot, is to blame Russia for the results of this election. And they are saying, the CIA is joining in by saying that Russia hacked this election with the idea to help Donald Trump. What do you know about that, Hans? And is it true or false?
Well, they're using this broad term, interference with the election, and they're doing that on purpose to blur the line between what happened, which was the WikiLeaks of internal DNC Clinton campaign emails, and the actual conduct of the election, you know, the voting process and election day, the counting of ballots. Let's make clear, again, Jay Johnson, Secretary of Homeland Security, gave an interview to the Washington Post last week in which he said there was no hacking on election day, so there was no change in the votes, no change in the counting of ballots. That brings us back to the WikiLeaks. We should all keep in mind that there are 17 intelligence agencies in the federal government. The CIA, that is anonymous sources, at the CIA have come out with this claim. Apparently the FBI disagrees. The Director of National Intelligence doesn't agree with this assessment either. And WikiLeaks itself is saying, we did not get this information from the Russians or a hacker. We got this information from a DNC insider who was disgusted with the way the DNC was trying to freeze Bernie Sanders out of the primary process.
Yeah, so we're dealing with, it is easy to be confused if you're not paying close attention. And that is, you know, that the, according to WikiLeaks, and also according to, I don't know if you saw this official from Uzbekistan, who is, I think he's the former president.
It's the former British ambassador to Uzbekistan.
Okay, yep. Sorry. Thank you for that correction. Was saying he's the one who met, not the person that took the email from the DNC, but another person who got them from the person who took insider, who did that, as you said, because they were upset with the way they were treating Bernie Sanders, and they did this handoff in a park in Washington, D.C. So that has nothing to do with the Russians, assuming that Julian Assange and the British ambassador to Uzbekistan can be trusted. And I asked a Russian expert just last week, Hans, what the European view of Assange was, and he said, well, everything he's leaked, no one's ever disputed his word about this stuff. He's a strange character, but he seems to be, you know, his actions back up his words. He doesn't seem to be a liar, at least when he makes these public statements. So I just think that's interesting. I also teased earlier that you are actually, your heritage is Russian, Hans von Spakovsky, and I think your story is so interesting, Hans, and I don't want to run out of time. I'd love for you to tell people what your link is with Mother Russia.
Well, Christmas is always a special time in my family because I know people have a hard time believing this, but my father was a married a much younger woman. So he was actually old enough that he fought in the Russian Revolution. He was an officer in the White Army. He fought against the Bolsheviks and the Communists. And at the end of the war, when unfortunately the White Army was losing, he was actually up in the very northern part of Russia in a place called Arkhangelsk. And the way he got out and escaped was he and a small party of other men and one woman skied over Christmas, skied all the way to Finland, several hundred miles, and spent Christmas Eve deep in the woods of Russia before they got out. It's quite a story.
It's an amazing story. Have you written about that?
I did. One of the first things I wrote when I first started writing was a story about this, and the Wall Street Journal actually printed it on Christmas Eve. It's called A Christmas Tale, 1919.
You know what? If you will send that to me, I'm going to put that on my Facebook, because you're a guest with me frequently. I think people would find that fascinating, Hans.
I will do that.
Now, did you know your father?
I did. I mean, he actually lived until the age of 92. He's been gone many years now, but he was literally the smartest man I ever knew. Like a lot of people from that age, he was really a Renaissance man. He spoke seven languages. He spoke French with a Parisian accent, because when he was growing up in Tsarist Russia, he had a French nanny from Paris. I mean, he was really quite a man.
Did he paint a picture of old Russia before the Leninist revolution? Did he talk to you about what it was like to serve under when Alexander was king? And
yes, in fact, he met Alexander when he was around 8 years old, because they were living in Moscow, and he was a very good student, and he won an award or a prize as a student, and the Tsar came to his school to give it to him.
So your family, you're from Russian royalty, safe to say, right?
Well, yeah, I guess you go far enough back.
You don't necessarily feel, maybe you don't live like royalty, but you are royalty by your blood. Your mother, is she an American born? Where did they meet?
My mother was German and grew up in Nazi Germany, as was a teenager, very young during the war. And, I mean, her experiences were also quite something. My parents actually met in a refugee camp in the American-occupied sector of Germany after the war ended.
Oh, my goodness, that's very interesting, especially, you know, I think you and I have spoken about this. I lived in Berlin, Germany, when the wall was still there. That's an area of tremendous interest to me, and I think it's a piece of history current history, that's absolutely fascinating that we're losing. You know, the people don't even remember. Even modern-day Germans, I don't think, have respect. You know, the Brandenburg Gate is up in Berlin, and you can pass through, and they have, you know, street fairs and festivals right where the wall was, where people died all the time just trying to escape. It's hard to paint a picture. Do you think that your parents translated to you, Hans? Did they actually speak about freedom and their experiences so that they could instruct you on how to view the world?
Oh, they did. And that's one of the reasons I'm a conservative today and such a patriotism runs very deep in my family, and it's because my parents were told us stories about what it was like to live in dictatorships. They told us stories about the Nazis, the secret police, the communists, and always said that we were so fortunate to be growing up in this country.
So what do you do now it's Christmas time, you have this great story, your father, great story, and your mother too. What do you do to hand that down to your kids?
We preserve a lot of the traditions here, and at every Christmas I retell that story to my kids so that they get the same imprint of understanding and realizing how lucky we are to live in this great country.
On a frivolous note, I remember that Nicholas and Alexander, the last Tsar of Russia, and his wife they had a Christmas tradition of these eggs, those Russian painted eggs. Is there any Russian tradition that you guys celebrate that's unique?
I have those painted Russian eggs sitting in my kitchen right now, and in fact, we fill those with chocolate and candy and things, and set them out for the kids.
You know, I always, Russia fascinates me, Hans, and I think one of the reasons, one thing, Russia has produced some of the most beautiful music. As a musician, I just loved the music of Russia. They had a pathos that seemed unlike any other, and I think that it's safe to say that Russia as a country has so suffered in such extremes, its people, and out of that pain and suffering has come the pathos of the Russian music, whether the great choruses or the beautiful works of Tchaikovsky or, you know, on and on I could go. But so, Hans, I wish we had more time. We should have spent the whole show talking about this, but it's been a real treat. Listen, Merry Christmas to you and your family, and thank you for giving us your expertise so faithfully here on this show in the mornings. Thank you. Thank you, Hans.
Thank you, Sandy. Bye-bye.
All right. Hans von Spakovsky. All right. Well, isn't that fun? I hope you have a great Christmas. I'll be back tomorrow, of course. I'm not going anywhere, but every day we're going to celebrate a little bit. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.